Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus. And Jim, we've talked about some of the great Republican pickup opportunities in the U.S. Senate in 2012 with all these retirements and some seats that were just naturally trending our way given the current political climate. There's only been a couple that have been really all that worrisome. And one of them, of course, is a Republican running for a re-election in Massachusetts. But as you point out on Campaign Spot today, Scott Brown at 73%. Obviously, a lot of conservatives have been upset that he has not voted the way we would have expected, but apparently that's paying off for him, and likely, barring some major change over the next year or so, will put him in a position to hold a seat that will keep conservatives much happier than if a radical liberal, which is pretty much what you're likely to get on the other side in Massachusetts, wins.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a surprise. I had figured that with a lot of Republicans across the country having some tough polling numbers, a lot of the governors in the Midwest, you kind of figured that Scott Brown would be, you know, caught in the wave there. And in fact, it's very much the opposite. And it's intriguing. It's not just that he hasn't towed the conservative line, so he's doing better. Fascinatingly, a public poll that came out in the middle of this month said that 96% of Republicans support him and match up against Democrats. So you hear some grumbling from Republicans, and I'm sure there'll be a bunch of conservatives who wish that Scott Brown would vote with them, you know, 100% of the time, instead of, you know, roughly 2 out of every 3 votes. But all in all, this is working pretty well in Massachusetts. And I think what's most surprising is you mentioned that poll that has him at 73% approval rating. It was a poll conducted by the DSCC. They put him up against 3 different potential Democrats, 3 members of the House, or 2 current members of the House, 1 former. And Brown is still winning each one by a double-digit margin. So really, the DSCC has a lot of work cut out for them. Scott Brown is in a very strong position, I think a much stronger position than a lot of people expected. A lot of time between now and Election Day 2012. But this is a seat that I think, you know, if the Democrats don't take back this seat, they will be missing out on by far their best opportunity in the 2012 cycle.
Absolutely right. And I think that lends a little bit of opposition to the theory that the only reason Scott Brown won is that Martha Coakley, a little over a year ago, was a deeply flawed candidate. She was a deeply flawed candidate, but there was something much deeper there. Scott Brown touched a chord with being number 41, which he never really got the chance to be, in opposition to the health care bill, bringing spending under control. So if he stands up strong during this whole budget fight, not only the rest of this fiscal year, but the fight to come, I think that'll keep him in good stead, even if he's not making conservatives all that thrilled on some other fronts. So on the flip side, back to where we usually are on the number 2 martini, and that's in Libya. Obviously, we've seen in the past 48 hours, pretty much since the moment the president said that Gaddafi's advance has been stopped, Gaddafi's advance began advancing again, forced the rebels back from Sirte, from Ras Lanuf, and now they're back around the Brega area. And we keep hearing more and more about how there are different al-Qaeda elements inside here. The numbers radically varying here. But right now, it's not looking good for either the effort to topple Gaddafi in the very near term or the president's plan to extricate himself neatly here, even though officially NATO takes command today.
Yeah, it just seems like one bit of bad news after another in Libya. Very ominous stuff. Apparently, there's a secret executive order urging the CIA to look into helping the rebels.
Right.
Not very secret, since we're now talking about it, and it came out from Reuters yesterday. Also kind of concerning. I mean, it looks like the Libyan rebels are just in all-out retreat, lost a couple of towns. And there was an interesting comment, I believe, in the Washington Post earlier today of a U.S. military official who's looking at the way the rebels are fighting and basically saying, these guys have no idea what they're doing. They always advance way too far, step right into traps, and end up having very serious problems. And, you know, kind of I think that's jumping out to me as probably the most disturbing factoid I've heard is now there's speculation. We don't know just how big this rebel force is. There's a reporter from The New Yorker down in Benghazi who said on CNN last night that he thinks it's less than 1,000 fighters, possibly in the very low hundreds on the opposition side. Greg, you and I are 2 people, which means we're only a few hundred smaller than the opposition force, okay? Right. You know, the first metaphor that came, or the first comparison that came to my mind was that, Greg, you know the guys who dress up like stormtroopers and march in parades and goes to children wards, et cetera?
Right.
There are 5,000 of them worldwide. So best case scenario, the Libyan rebels are 1/5 the size of the 501st Legion of Star Wars fans. That's not reassuring. That's, in fact, pretty darn troubling. And, you know, then we find ourselves in a circumstance which our goal is to see Gaddafi go. You can't do it with 1,000 guys. You're lucky if you can, you know, take over a town with 1,000 people. And mind you, these guys are running around with, you know, machine guns on the back of their Toyota pickup trucks. I mean, this is by no means a well-outfitted military force. So getting worse, getting more complicated, and of course, getting more secret. And that's always a good formula, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah, exactly. My money's on Joe Biden. I remember when he revealed the secret undisclosed location where the vice president goes during times of national emergency. So if anybody's on the hook for that, my guess is it's Biden. But I really have no proof of that, just a hunch. On to number three now. And speaking of vice presidents, Dan Quayle was a guy who got into a lot of media mischief, unintentionally a lot of the time, for things he said, and in some cases didn't actually say, but things that have been attributed to him. And at the Congressional Correspondents' Dinner last night, new Arizona Congressman Ben Quayle, the oldest son of the former vice president, showed that he's getting a lot of attention, too, for some interesting statements, although these were entirely intentional.
And Congressman Wiener, it's great to see you. My Republican colleagues, I'm sorry, my fellow insurance subsidiaries, asked me to give you a big hug on that Obamacare waiver. But I heard that there's some speculation, actually, that you may be facing Elliot Spitzer in the upcoming New York mayoral election. Spitzer returning to politics is great news, at least for D.C. area hotels.
It's really good to see a Quayle getting the last laugh. I must say, when Ben Quayle won his House primary, it was a very very wide open primary. I think there were 10 Republicans running. It's a very Republican seat. I was among the folks who was not really thrilled for a couple of reasons. Among them, I don't want the idea of there being a ruling class. I don't want necessarily, you know, whenever a son of a famous politician runs for office, there's always that perception that he's running mostly on his father's name and reputation and daddy's old fundraising network. So this is really one of the first big statements we've seen from Ben Quayle in Washington. And I would urge people to watch the entire clip on Real Clear Politics. In 7 minutes, he just leaves nobody unspared. And it's some pretty rough zingers in everybody's direction. You know, Hoyer and Elliot Spitzer and a couple of Republicans. And he was not alone in that. Apparently, last night, Rand Paul said of Newt Gingrich that he has more positions on Libya than he has ex-wives. So, you know, a little bit of ribbing going on amongst them and all that stuff. But I guess there's a part of me that feels like if Ben Quayle becomes the dealer of the zingers, if he becomes the one who gets the last laugh instead of being the butt of the joke the way his beleaguered father was, it'll be a bit of family retribution that I think it'll be enjoyable. And also, I think it kind of, you know, it suggests that Ben Quayle is not just the legacy figure, that perhaps there's a little something going on there. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder that may serve him well in his years to come in Washington.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised that there was a little bit of payback here, given how Republicans, Democrats, and the media were pretty merciless toward his family. But good to see some fun being had in the midst of a lot of serious business, and let's hope they get back to the serious business soon. But a fun night and some very funny lines there from the congressman. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.